In our studies, we've been considering, obviously, the story of, or the remarkable story, really, of Deborah and Barak, and the story that outlines what happens when faithful leadership is brought amongst us in terms of its ability to inspire change. In the time of Deborah and Barak was a time we find the nation had totally lost sight of God. They turned to idols, and as a result of that, they failed to take their inheritance, and God then wipes them out and puts them under oppression. And as a result of that faithless leadership, the transferring of the truth from generation to generation, they fell into the trap of serving idols, and God sold them into the hands of a traitor, Jabin, king of Canaan, and were crushed by Sisera under his iron-fisted grip. And under complete oppression, we saw the nation turn on their knees to God for help, and yet their leader, whom God had requested to lead, wasn't there. He was failing to stand up for his responsibilities. And the story, as we've seen in Judges 4 and 5, is the story of how one remarkable woman steps up to the plate and swings and hits a home run as she coaches Barak to uncover his potential and to take on his responsibilities and to lead in the way that God had asked him. And it was through her inspirational leadership, you remember, and the support that she gave Barak, very simply by just going with him because she understood the need, was able to inspire change amongst him, who then inspired the nation to stand up, who then inspired the tribes to come. And all of a sudden, God's purpose begins to outwork amongst the nation as they spark a military revolution that takes back all of the territory that Jabin, king of Canaan, had stolen from amongst them. And the people, united together once more, begin to worship Yahweh, their father. And we've explored the remarkable lessons, haven't we, that come from the concepts of leadership that's seen in Deborah and in Barak and by Jael, to show that God's purpose demands us all as individuals to stand up and to contribute in our ecclesias. And I think one of the most remarkable things about this story is that it doesn't always have to be a Barak, does it? Not everyone can be a Barak, but everyone can be a Deborah. Everyone can see a need and take a matter in private and to help and coach and inspire each other to help in the truth. And so if we can stand up and be leaders in that responsibilities and to fulfill our God-given roles, we can inspire others to their potential in the truth as we walk together in unity to fight our oppressor. And at the end of the battle, Deborah and Barak sing the song. And in our last class, we saw the remarkable duet that these two sing. And you remember that they sung this song not to the nation of Israel, but to the rulers and the leaders that were amongst the nation as a warning of what was about to happen in their territory. Jabin, king of Canaan, might have dominated the north, but watch out every other king. Watch out every other prince, because God and his people were coming for seizing their inheritance. And so we saw that Deborah and Barak sing about the leaders that stand up. And then they sing about the way in which God's presence was in like in times past. And the nation that flowed from Mount Tabor and that took the territory was like the 10,000 saints that marched into Canaan to seize their inheritance, just like it was from Mount Sinai unto Mount Seir. And we saw that the remarkable transformation came from a time which was absolutely leaderless, rudderless. The context of the nation at the time of Deborah and Barak was a time when there was nothing there. Leadership had ceased until Deborah stood up. And then we saw that the blessing that they sing was the blessing of those that had willingly offered their lives and jeopardized their lives. This didn't contribute to the truth. They gave their lives to save their brethren. And in contrast to that, we saw the cursing of the slackers who didn't. The tribes, the northern and the eastern tribes who refused to come across to help their brethren. And then they blessed Jael for the heroic actions. And then the depiction, as we had read for us as our introduction tonight, is of Sisera's mother and her impending doom. And then finally Deborah and Barak sing a plea for God's ongoing support so that the nation would take back all the territories that so let all thine enemies perish, O Yahweh, and then that love thee as the sun going forth in its might. And tonight, brothers and sisters, we want to have a look at Sisera's mum. What is with Sisera's mum at the end of this song? It's almost like it's randomly selected and added into the end of the story that we've got this picture of this mother looking out the window. Well, it's not random. Certainly isn't random, and it's marvellous, brothers and sisters and young people. Have a look at this. So the context has been focusing on the remarkable bravery of leaders in Israel that jeopardised their life. The remnant of Ephraim and all of Benjamin and all the Bible students, those that hold the pen, put down their pen and pick up the sword with Manasseh and the lawgivers from Zebulun, and they join forces as Bible students to chase Sisera and his army out the door. And Barak's own tribe of Naphtali and Deborah, bringing the rest of them with them, joined in the battle to overcome their enemies. And yet there were those who didn't jeopardize their lives. Those that didn't. Those that remained in the isles. Those that stayed in their ships. Those that couldn't be bothered. And we looked at all the excuses that we give, don't we, brothers and sisters, to why we can't do things when we're asked. And I captured in the story of these tribes who didn't respond. And Deborah and Barak turned to the attention of the bravery of the key heroine of the story, Jael, the bloodshed, the boldness, the beautiful, brutal attack that she annihilates and decapitates Sisera, that he might never hurt or destroy or oppress amongst them ever again. And with the workman's hammer and the nail of the tent, the two symbols of her frustration, the workman's hammer, the reason they had relocated for employment, and the tent peg representing her nomadic existence, she blots Sisera out with zeal and frenzy and a complete destruction of that mind as she smites him through the temples. And now the song changes scene. And it moves from the gruesome murder scene of Jael's tent to the royal castle of Sisera's mother. And the question we have to ask ourselves is, why change of scene? What's going on in the story? Well, you remember that the Battle of Judges 4 actually had two parts. And they're reflected in this song, you see. The two parts, the overthrow of Israel's enemies, we often read the story of the destruction of Sisera as the Battle of Judges 4, but the last few verses of Judges chapter 4 actually outline the second part of the battle. You see, part one was the battle against Sisera and his ultimate destruction and demise at the hand of Jael of Judges chapter 4, verses 11 to 22. And that's what's reflected in the song in Judges chapter 5 and verses 19 to 27. But part two of the battle was going to be the battle of the children of Israel as God subdues, verse 23 of Judges 4, on that day Jabin, king of Canaan, before the children of Israel, and the hand of the children of Israel was going to prosper and prevail against Jabin, the king of Canaan, until they had destroyed Jabin, king of Canaan. You see, what we realize, brothers and sisters, is that Sisera and his battle was purely just the entrees to the main cause. You see, the battle against Jabin and the restoration of all the cities and the villages that he had stolen was going to be captured by Deborah in the song of the story of Sisera's mother, Judges chapter 5, verses 28 to 31. Ultimately, the battle with Sisera was just a catalyst. The 10,000 men that would come, the rest of the nation would respond, and galvanized as a nation, they would now completely eradicate, and the oppressive regime of Jabin, king of Canaan, with the support of Yahweh of armies. And what Deborah describes in the last part of her song, brothers and sisters and young people, is the events that would precede the destruction of all those aligned to Jabin and his militant empire. And so Deborah now wants to focus on the mother of Sisera. And though we provided this beautiful insight into the mind of a mother who raised this particular person, we get an insight, brothers and sisters, into her character, the type of person that she was, the type of narcissist she was. You see, this woman produced the iron-fisted Sisera. What was his home life like? And what was she like? And note the way she's introduced. Judges chapter 5, verse 28. She's the mother of Sisera that looked out a window. She's called the mother of Sisera. And by the way, this is remarkable, isn't it? A mother. She's already mentioned another mother in this chapter already. She's called herself the mother of Israel. And now we're introduced to the mother of Sisera. And you couldn't get a more stark contrast between these two mothers, brothers and sisters. In the story, we have the mother of Israel, verse 7, the prophetess who gave, a servant who willingly offered herself, a woman at the top of Mount Tabor who was in the heart of the battle, surrounded by her warriors, who cared for her people and their salvation, and who would sing praises of Yahweh's victory compared to the woman, the mother of Sisera, a queen who waited to receive and took whatever she could. A royal, as we'll see, who expected to be waited on. A woman in her upper chamber who was as far away from the battle as she possibly could be, surrounded not by her warriors but by her princesses that she totally ignores, who cares only for slaves and for spoils of war, and who's whinging to her companions about the delay of the arrival of stolen merchandise. Our brothers and sisters, these two mothers couldn't be different. You couldn't get a starker contrast between these two mothers if you tried, and their outlook on their life. And they stand representative of the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent, who each had given birth, one to a nation that was galvanized to save, and another who was trying to oppress and to destroy. And one mother is interested in her service to others, whilst the other is totally focused on herself and the ill-gotten gains. But brothers and sisters, hidden in this story is so much more than that. So we're introduced to Sisera's mother, who's been anxiously awaiting the arrival of her son from the battlefield. And of course, while she's starting to get anxious, look what it says in verse 28. The mother of Sisera is looking at the window and she's crying through the lattice work, "Why is his chariot so long in coming? Why tarry the wheels of his chariots?" And she's looking out this window and she's crying. It means to bawl or to cry shrilly. She's like anxious. She's full of anxiety. What is she anxious about, brothers and sisters? Well, I'll tell you what she's not anxious about. She's not anxious about whether Sisera had lost the battle. Not at all. That didn't even cross her mind. As if Sisera would lose a battle. This is my son. Wasn't even an option. It hadn't even crossed her mind. Israel was totally outnumbered, outmaneuvered, and totally outgunned. They'd brought toothpicks to a knife to a gunfight, toothpicks to a tank battle. They had nothing. So Sisera's going to wipe them out. Simple. What she's anxious about, brothers and sisters, is what the Bible tells us. It says, look, she's anxious about why the spoils of war. I want to get my hands on these things. She's getting anxious about seeing the evidence of the spoils. Surely that they must have made a plunder by now. It must have secured. Hurry up. Where is it? I want the woman for the slaves and the men and the fine garments for Sisera. It's almost like Sisera had gone to the shops, brothers and sisters. Hurry up. I want to see what he's got. She's looking out a window, brothers and sisters. Oh, you don't miss that phrase in the Bible, do you? Because this woman joins the lineage of a special breed of woman. Hopefully you don't look out windows, ladies. A special breed of woman who gaze arrogantly out of windows. You see, here in the story we have Sisera's mum in Judges chapter 5 and verse 28, who's greedily awaiting the spoils of war. Michal, Saul's daughter in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 16, is going to cruelly despise the actions of her husband and her king. And Jezebel, brothers and sisters, in 2 Kings chapter 9, verse 30, is callously going to seek to distract Jehu from his murderous task. You see, these women become known as those who look out at the window. Pride and arrogance and cruelty as accurately portrayed, brothers and sisters, by the sin that they represented. And so she's surrounded by whom? Well, verse 29 says that her wise ladies answered her. Yea, she returned answer to herself. Her wise ladies, do you know, we can come back to some of these slides if you want the passages. However, we'll keep moving for need for time. That word for wise ladies, brothers and sisters and young people, is a special word that's only used four other times throughout Scripture. And the times that it's used is used for the idea of a princess or a noble woman. Now, here's your four quotes. First of Kings 11, verse 3, it's used of Solomon's wives. And Esther chapter 1 and verse 18, it's used for the ladies of Persia or the wives of all the princes of Persia. And Esther 1, verse 18. It's used in Isaiah 49, verse 23, of queens. And of Lamentations chapter 1 and verse 1, of the princesses. And the point I wanted to make, brothers and sisters and young people, was this, that the ladies weren't just maids. They were her royal companions. Now, that's fascinating. Because if they were her royal companions, what does that make Sisera's mother? See, Sisera's mother was obviously part of the royalty, part of the royal family, possibly married to Jabin, king of Canaan, maybe even the queen. We don't know. We're not told. But she was definitely part of the royalty. She's definitely royalty, and she's a lady of importance in the empire, surrounded by her royal princesses, and who are classified as her wise ladies. And she's sitting there at home, out the window with her maidens, waiting for the anxious arrival of her son. And she's sort of asking their counsel, but totally ignoring them. You read that in the story? Look what it says, verse 21. She asked the question, why is his chariot in so long in coming? Why tarry the wheels of his chariot? And his wise ladies return answer. Yea, she returned answer to herself. She's totally ignoring them. They speak and she cuts over them. Why is his chariot coming? They begin to answer and she rudely and arrogantly cuts them off, answering her own questions herself. And look what she says in verse 30. Have they not sped? Have they not divided the prey to every man a damsel or two, to Sisera a prey of divers colours, a prey of divers colours of needlework, needlework on both sides, meat for the necks of them that take the spoil? Have they not sped and have they not divided the prey? See, she's not interested in the death or the number of deaths or the casualties. She's only interested in two things. Only two things she wants to know about. The first is, how many new damsels have they taken as prey? And it better be a good number. And what sort of garments has Sisera got for me for the spoil? Do you know the word damsels, brothers and sisters? Means it's a term of contempt, a wench. Just means a womb. How many more wombs did they get for us to be able to have more babies as slaves? That's what she's saying in the story. How can we get the increase of the slaves that we need in this empire? I hope they've got some more wombs for us so that we can breed more slaves. But the garments. Oh, the slaves were sort of there or thereabouts, but the garments were something else. And her mind begins to churn on these garments, like she begins to be obsessed about them. And she's like almost feeling the fabric and touching the silk and feeling these special things. You read it in the record. Look at her. She says, to every man, have they not sped? Have they not divided the prey? To every man a damsel or two? To Sisera, a prey of divers colours, a prey of divers colours of needlework, of divers colours of needlework on both sides. She begins to feel the fabric. Ooh, this is going to be amazing. You see, these diverse colours of needlework were embroidery. It's really what it means. They were exotic garments made of expensive imported fabrics and cottons, most likely from Egypt and afar. These were the garments of the princesses, of the queens, and of royalty. Psalm 45, verse 14, Ezekiel 26. These were the garments of nobles, of princes. They were female garments, brothers and sisters. Now, female garments. You see, the Hebrews excelled in the art of dyeing, as was seen, by the way, not dyeing as in dying, but dyeing as in clothes dyeing. Right? And they were exceeded in making of garments and the dyeing of garments, especially in around the tabernacle and the priestly robes and the expensive coats like Joseph's, the Lord Jesus Christ's, who were not to be cut. Delilah was probably one of the ones that would make these garments with the loom that she had in her room. They were highly prized possessions and treasured for life. These were the garments that Samson went and got from Ashkelon. The wools usually came from Egyptians, and excavations, brothers and sisters, have revealed the wool dyeing art was a leading industry in central Israel. They were top garments. But who were the garments for? Do you know, it's better translated, spoils of divers coloured raiment for Sisera, spoils of divers coloured raiment, embroidered, coloured raiment, richly embroidered from the necks of them who are taken as spoil. They were going to be garments taken from the necks of them who had taken as spoil. Who was the spoil? Brothers and sisters, well, they were the damsels that they were going to be bringing. You see, what damsels? How is that working? Well, you think about it, brothers and sisters. If Sisera was trying to destroy 10,000 men, what did Sisera's mother expect would happen next? Well, you see, they wouldn't just stop at the destruction of 10,000 men. They were going to get in their chariots and they were going to circle all the villages and collect up all of these slaves and bring them all home to Hazor and take every bit of garment that they could for themselves. These are female garments, and she couldn't wait to get her hands on them. These garments would be for her. This is what I've been looking forward to, the latest shopping trip. It's better than Country Road, better than anything Mars can produce. But notice the key words, brothers and sisters, that are mentioned here. Sisera's mother wanted to see the prisoners captured. To take what, brothers and sisters? To take, oh, now these words are going to bounce off the page. A spoil and a prey. Now, does that provide us, brothers and sisters, with any echoes? A spoil and a prey? This song focuses on the two phases of the battle against Sisera and the destruction of Sisera's mother, because riding up that valley was not going to be Sisera on his chariot. Oh, no. These were going to be Yahweh saints manifested in a unity, in a unit glorifying him to take possession of that castle. The destruction of Sisera's mother is prophetically going to be displayed in a type we see so many times in history. The overthrow of Sisera was going to be the destruction of Gog. And the destruction of the mother of harlots and her daughters is going to be manifested in the subjugation of Catholic Europe. These events are set before us. The two phases of the destruction of this battle, Sisera and all of Jabin, king of Canaan, and his territories, with this woman and her daughters, is going to be prophetic, brothers and sisters, of the time of the end. And Deborah, brothers and sisters, sees in type this whole pattern being outworked. And the events are set before us in such absolute detail and precision in the story that it perfectly depicts the events subsequent to Christ's return. Have a look at this. So Sisera is going to not have just his own men, but Sisera is going to have a confederate army. We know that because he had Harosheth of the Gentiles, a city of everyone that were mixed in metal workers in that place. Remember, we looked at Harosheth of the Gentiles, Ezekiel 38 verses 4 to 6. It's going to be a confederate army that makes up Gog's army at the time of the end. Sisera's army, notice what it says, it's going to be full of swords, of shields, of chariots, and horsemen. Judges 4:15 and 5 verse 8. Well, we know that is going to be exactly what Gog's going to have at the time of the end in Ezekiel 38 verse 4. Yahweh, it says, would fight against Sisera and had gone out before him, exactly as God would do in Ezekiel 38 verse 18. And God had promised to Barak in Judges chapter 4 verse 6 and 7 that he would draw Sisera unto him. Oh, that's exactly what God says to Gog. I'm going to put hooks in your jaws and you're going to come with me. Ezekiel 38 verse 4. Sisera's motivation of that battle wasn't just to destroy the 10,000 men, but as revealed by Sisera's mother, that he'd come to take a spoil and a prey, the two words that's used of Gog in chapter 38 verse 12 of Ezekiel. And Sisera's army gathered as a great company. Ezekiel 38 verse 4, verse 7, verse 13, verse 15, the key expression used of Gog and his army. And God's jealousy and God's fury would come up his face, and that there would be a great shaking in the land, and there would be rain and hail and fire and brimstone, just as he would in Ezekiel 38 verses 18 to 20. And a sword would go out against Sisera, just as it would with Gog. Sisera's destruction was going to be prophesied by the prophets, just as it would be with Gog. The enemies would flee, and Yahweh and his saints would come, and not a man will be left, says Ezekiel 38 verse 4, just as it was with Sisera. And here, brothers and sisters, in the story, Sisera is clearly set out as a type of Gog himself, leading forth his confederate host, and his ultimate destruction was going to be foreshadowed in the work of Christ and the saints, and the march of the rainbowed angel, and the arrival of the man of Bozrah of Isaiah 63, as the ones who shine forth from Mount Seir and march from Sinai unto the sanctuary, the words we know well. The work of Christ and the redeemed and the glorified saints who are going to come to destroy the oppressor of God's people who had taken their land. It's remarkable, isn't it, brothers and sisters? As the battle and the destruction of Sisera was the intro or entree to the main affair, the overthrow of Jabin and the taking back of the stolen cities, so too is Armageddon. To the battle against Jezebel, the mother of harlots, the conquest of Catholic Europe. And you can't miss this, can you, brothers and sisters? Daniel's image has two phases too with the stone, the smashing of the image on the feet and the grinding of it to powder. And there is no better and more fitting description of the harlot system of Catholic Europe than the depiction of Jezebel surrounded by her daughters, which have made themselves drunk with the blood of the saints. Then what is depicted here in the story of Sisera's mother surrounded by her wise ladies, dreaming of the spoils of war and the merchandise to come. And as the destruction of Sisera is just the catalyst to bring the nation together as they seek to restore the territories that they'd lost to Jabin, king of Canaan, King Sin, lorded over by Sisera's mother, we see depicted in Jezebel II, the mother of harlots, the abomination of the earth, the great whore to whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. And look at the picture painted for us in Revelation 17 and 18. It's matched. You see, here we have a great whore. Do you know what she's arrayed in, brothers and sisters? She's arrayed in garments of diverse colours. Funny that, isn't it? She sits as a queen. She rules over many peoples, nations, and multitudes. Who's been working, why, with the merchants of the earth. Who were the Canaanites, brothers and sisters? They were a group of traders, as we showed in our first study. Merchants of the earth who controlled the trade and waxed rich through the abundance of their delicacies. See, who was controlling trade at the time of Deborah and Barak, brothers and sisters? Because these nation of Israel had to go by the goat tracks to walk around. No one walked on the highway. This queen sat across all of that. And what key things does Revelation 18 tell us that this harlot system loves? Well, they love goods and merchandise and the souls of men. And her destruction we know in Revelation 18. Don't have any time to look at this. Do some research and have a look yourself. It's remarkable because her destruction will be swift, totally unexpected. In 1 hour she'll reward double for all her sins. And the saints will once again burst forth into song as they did in Judges chapter 5 verse 2, because depicted for us in Revelation 19 is the song of the Yahweh's saints who praise and sing because Yahweh has finally avenged his people. So the destruction of Sisera, brothers and sisters, is followed by the annihilation of Sisera's mother, who foreshadow the work of Christ and the saints and the Jews and the work of Armageddon and the subjugation of the nations that have joined themselves to this harlot system. And Europe is cleansed. And by this process, brothers and sisters, Yahweh will redeem and avenge his people who have cried out from under the altars and have cried throughout time to be saved, and will cause his kingdom to once more be established, and those saints to be redeemed. And a time of rest, brothers and sisters, will be ushered into being, just as we have recorded for us in Judges chapter 5. It's an absolutely stunning and remarkable prophetic type that Deborah sees before her in the panorama of history is revealed to this particularly incredibly insightful prophetess. And so she finishes her song, brothers and sisters, in verse 31. She says, "So let all thine enemies perish, O Yahweh, but let them that love him be as the sun when he goeth forth in his might." But let them that love him be as the sun, a brilliant, radiant sun that goes forth in full glory. And here Deborah beautifully and poetically pictures the work of the saints like the sun as it bursts forth in full brilliance, the rays of which will shine with burning fury to execute vengeance on all of Yahweh's enemies. You see, this prophecy wasn't, and song wasn't about just Jabin, was it? It was about all of God's enemies, that they would have the same treatment by Yahweh as they go forth. And note, she's picking up the courageous and positive actions of the warriors who would go forth against their enemies. And here in the record, those that went forth on this occasion was Barak and his men in Judges chapter 4, verse 14 and 16. It was going to be Jael in her actions in verse 18 and 22 of chapter 4. It was going to be Yahweh himself that would go forth in verse 14 and chapter 5 and verse 4. And it was going to be the tribes who respond in chapter 5, verse 14 and 15. There were those who volunteered, the saints who volunteered and jeopardized their lives in service to their brethren to do what, brothers and sisters? To bring about Yahweh's judgment. And it's a glorious and vivid picture of the sun bursting forth as these wonderful volunteers had donated their lives in service to their God. And do you know what, brothers and sisters? If you can find me where else it might say about the sun going forth in his might, I am all ears. But I've only found one passage in the scripture that refers to the way in which the sun bursts forth in his might, and you wouldn't guess where that is, would you? It's the Revelation chapter 1. The vision of John, of the man of the one. The vision John sees, just come with me to Revelation chapter 1. Have a look at this. Revelation chapter 1. Here's the saints, the glorified saints in Christ, executing vengeance on Yahweh's enemies. And in this vision of Revelation chapter 1, John is shown and going to be revealed to the one who would bring to pass and reveal the message of God's judgment. And here, this revelation and this prophecy of the future and the judgment is going to be poured out upon Yahweh's enemies, and it's going to be given by a man who's likened unto the Son of Man. And he's going to execute judgment and vengeance and establish the kingdom of God. And it's not just Christ, is it, brothers and sisters? But a multitudinous Christ body who is manifested in full glory as the glorified saints. You see, John sees revealed before him the 10,000 men that Moses refers to in his song in chapter 33. The 10,000 men that Judges chapter 4 describe. John sees one like the Son of Man. Look what it says in verse 10 of Revelation chapter 1. And I was in the Spirit, he says, on the Lord's day, the time of the return of Christ, the time when execution was ready. And he heard behind me a great voice, as the voice as of a trumpet, saying, I am Alpha and Omega, the first and the last. And what thou seest, write in a book, and send it unto the seven ecclesias which are in Asia, unto Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, and Laodicea. And I turned to see the voice that spoke with me. And being turned, I saw seven golden candlesticks, and in the midst of that seven candlesticks was one like unto the Son of Man. And look what he's wearing, brothers and sisters. Well, he's clothed to the priest. He's clothed with a garment down to the foot, and girt about the paps with a golden girdle. This is the saints perfected as priests, brothers and sisters. The golden girdle representing the immortalized saints ministering, that's been wrapped around. These are workers, brothers and sisters. The girdle that's girded on to serve. Now ministering to the needs of others in an act of service. And his head, he says, and his hairs were white like wool, as white as snow, and his arms were a flame of fire. His hair was wool and white. This is the saints washed and cleansed in the blood of the Lamb. His eyes a flame of fire. This is the intelligence of divine judgment as they execute God's vengeance. And his feet, he says, verse 15, was like fine brass, as if they burned in a furnace, you see. This is the incandescent branch of the saints that go forth to tread down the wicked and to execute divine judgment. And they have a voice. His voice was the sound of many waters. You see, this is the purified and perfected saints who are going to call out and who are called out from many peoples, nations, and tongues. Many waters have been gathered from everywhere. All the tribes coming together. And in his mouth, in his right hand, he had seven stars. And out of his mouth was a sharp, two-edged sword. Sisera was going to die by the sword. His men were going to be killed by the sword. And here's the saints with the two-edged sword, divine judgment, to execute judgment of the message that would come forth out of their mouth. But above all of this, brothers and sisters, you see what his countenance is. What is his countenance going to be like? Verse 16. His countenance was as the sun shining in his strength. Look at his countenance. It's the sun shining in his strength. You see, here is the reenactment of the way in which the saints would once more again participate in assisting Yahweh execute the vengeance of his enemies. The book of Revelation, just as the Song of Deborah, was going to be a message not only of hope and relief to the saints, but a warning to the world of warning that the judgment was coming and a counsel to come out of her and to be turned unto Yahweh Elohim of Israel. You see, both of these books, brothers and sisters, both of these stories are recorded both as a message for the saints who were under oppression, under trial, under tribulation, and a word of warning to those that would oppose God. But the saints, brothers and sisters, were to realize, just as the people of Israel were to realize in the time of Deborah and Barak and Jael, that God will never, ever cast aside those who love him and that truly seek his face in sincerity and in truth. And John is shown a picture on the Isle of Patmos, in solitary, of the hope that was set before him, that he might not lose hope, and that he might see how God will bring to pass his saints. John is shown a man who represented the 10,000 of Yahweh's saints, glorified and immortalized volunteers who'd made themselves ready to lead captivity captive and to bring into subjection all of Yahweh's enemies, that God might save his people. So let all thine enemies perish, and let them be, them that love him, be like the sun going forth in his strength. You see, brothers and sisters, we can have so much faith in our God that he seeks our welfare and will save us from our oppression. In the story of Deborah and the story of Barak and the story of Jael shows us just how leadership can motivate and inspire others to fulfill God's purpose in every single one of us. Leadership is not a request, as we saw in our previous study. It's a commandment we all must respond to demonstrate our love for our God and to see what he's done for us. Leadership's not always about being out the front. In fact, most of the time it's not. Leadership's about seeing a need, taking initiative, to go forth in positive action, to motivate others in the truth, that by our example and by our dedication and by our service and our encouragement, we can show God's love to one another. But it requires courage. It requires bravery. It requires spiritual perception, and it requires diligence. The story shows us the need that we have, brothers and sisters, to serve one another as our Lord has shown us, to be a willing volunteer, to put our hand up, to be prepared in his service, to show how much we appreciate his mercy and his love in our lives, so that we, like those of Israel who responded, are prepared to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. It has shown us how we can lead in our God-given roles, both men and women, as we endeavor to serve in his service. The question for us is, how will we respond? How will we act? May these remarkable men and women have inspired and encouraged us as their faithfulness is shown, who in their distress and oppression and time of need trusted in their God, and who willingly volunteered, offering themselves in service. May their example motivate us to do the same and encourage each other as we await for the day when judgment will come and God's kingdom is here.